On this channel, we talk a lot about recovering from addiction. Many times it has to do with substance abuse, but there are many other types of addictions. Welcome to the Mindful Space, your trusted sanctuary for recovery and mental health healing. I'm Michelle, your host. Today's topic is about sports gambling addiction. This type of addiction can affect people from all ages, including teenagers and even children. The accessibility of online betting platforms and exposure to gambling advertising can lead to early exposure and addiction. Our guest Chastinati's sports gambling addiction lasted over a decade. This addiction shaped his life and the consequences he faced. In this episode, he will explain how online betting can become addicting, share strategies for those in recovery, and offer advice for anyone battling this addiction. Welcome back. Before we get into today's episode, I would like to dig a little deeper into what sports gambling is. So welcome to Mind Scoop, a new segment of the Mindful Space Show. Welcome to Mind Scoop, a new segment of the Mindful Space Show. This is a segment where we like to give you more background information about this episode's topic. In the United States, we have witnessed a surge in sports betting's popularity due to widespread legalization, but this growth has a significant cost to mental health. In 2018, the Supreme Court's decision opened the floodgates, with 33 states now legalizing it. And while it provides economic benefits and entertainment, concerns about its mental health impacts have increased. Research and addiction specialists identify various contributing factors. Extensive advertising during major events like the Super Bowl, for example, glamorizes betting, potentially fostering addiction. The false sense of control and immediate reward in-game lead to overconfidence and reckless gambling. Enticing incentives such as a sign-up bonus create an illusion of free money, drawing individuals into further gambling. The repercussions in mental health are profound. Gambling addiction, linked to stress, anxiety, and depression, rises as individuals struggle to control impulses and cope with financial losses. In addiction's context, gambling losses lead to severe financial stress, triggering heightened anxiety, depression, and in extreme cases, even thoughts of suicide. Fast-paced betting intensifies impulsivity, leading to poor decisions, deepening financial and emotional distress. Gambling addiction strains personal relationships, causing emotional turmoil, conflicts, and isolation. The normalization of sports betting, especially among young audiences, desensitizes individuals to risk, fostering impulsive behavior and a lack of awareness about the consequences. Addressing regulatory oversight, public awareness, and seeking support and treatment for gambling addiction and mental health issues are crucial to mitigate these challenges. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of The Mindful Space. Today, we have Chastinati. I said that right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Welcome. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited for this.
Yes, I'm so excited about our conversation today. We are going to go deep, dive into gambling. Yep. Your particular kind of gambling was addiction to sports gambling, correct?
Yep.
Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about your story?
Yeah, and so, oh man, story goes over the
where do I start?
Decades, right? But my love for sports started as a kid. And, you know, when I was 5 years old, I put on ice hockey skates for the first time living in Colorado and playing on an outdoor hockey rink under the snow. You know, I kind of fell in love with sports immediately, and especially ice hockey at a young age. And fortunately for me, I had a 5 year old or a 5 year older brother than me. And so the competitiveness within the family just started right at the age of 5 for me and 10 for him. And so sports were my entire life. And then up until about the age of 16, when I started to see the other side of sports, which involved sports gambling. And so, you know, the story can go on forever. And I know we're going to talk about it. But, you know, sports have been my entire life. You know, I've been a player, I've been a coach. I've been on the good side of sports. I've been on the bad side of sports when it comes to gambling and championships and so forth. And so my experience within sports goes many different ways.
Yeah, you got all kind of perspectives. Yeah. Now, when we talk about, you know, you say at 16, this kind of started with the gambling. What kind of events led to this? What exposed you at 16?
Yeah, so at 16, you know, we didn't have the accessibility when I was 16 years old to gambling like there is today on mobile phones. And obviously the advertising with a lot of these sports gambling companies on TV and media coverage with it. So at 16 years old, it kind of started, honestly, just in between friends, you know, betting on who can run the fastest, betting on who can even eat the most tacos, eating contests. Okay. So it was more than just sports, building the gambling side of what it was like to bet on things. And obviously, when you bet on something, it really brings a competitiveness out in you that that you're not used to, because it can be more than sports. So starting to understand games more and my knowledge for sports, and really thinking that you know more than maybe a professional when the professional game comes on, like, oh, I know this pitcher. You know, he's an all-star. He's 5-0 on the season. He's going to get an easy win today. So, you know, you kind of throw some money on it thinking that, you know what's going to happen. And then in reality, he ends up getting smoked for, you know, 4 runs in 4 innings, and you end up losing that game. And so that kind of what sparked it at a young age was just my love for sports and being engulfed in sports. And then all of a sudden seeing, you know, how you can also bet on sports. You know, some of the popular ones back then were a lot done overseas. So you were kind of betting on your laptop or no people around town type of situation. And so at a young age, you kind of got exposed to it just being around sports.
At what point did you start to realize that this might be an issue for you? Like, is there a moment you can pinpoint, or when did you have this realization?
Yeah, so there was a lot of different moments, I'd say, throughout the last 10 to 15 years where you kind of start to think, okay, I'm losing a lot. But you always kind of came back. So you're thinking to yourself, maybe I do have a problem. But at that age, you know, we're kind of very naive at 18, 19, 20 years old still, that you don't understand what the problem is, because it wasn't drugs and alcohol necessarily. So I wasn't hurting my body physically. I was still very active and doing sports and going on hikes and everything. But I didn't understand what I was doing to myself mentally. And that's where, probably around the age of 22, when I graduated college, I started to realize that maybe there was starting to be some bad moments, some dark days where I was starting to feel that depression and feel lost in whether relationship that I was in, or losing a friendship over a sports game that we had bet on together. And you kind of start to think to yourself, what is this lifestyle? What is going on here? You start to see the mental side of it. So probably around the age 22, 23, I started to realize I probably had a problem, but it really didn't stop for probably another 7 years until I was about 29, 30 years old.
Oh, wow. And what led you to actually call it quits, decide to quit sports gambling after so many years?
Yeah, there was a lot of moments, I think, where you kind of hit rock bottom and you start to think, maybe potentially this isn't the life for me. So you kind of do start to think in dark places where you're like, okay, I got to get my life back on track. So, you know, for me, it wasn't necessarily the direct correlation to betting on a game when I realized that I really needed to change my life around. It was more the long-term effect it played on my mental health and my mood swings. And I lost a relationship that was dearly close to me, that, you know, that person made me better as a person, and just seeing the quality of life that is out in front of you. And, you know, I lost that, and to lose that indirectly from not necessarily betting on a game, but the long-term effect it's had on my life over 10 years of depression and anxiety and, you know, financially, that was the aha moment where I said I will never touch it again. And so it's kind of a weird aha moment, because again, it wasn't because I necessarily bet on a game. It was the that person.
Well, just a life-changing experience.
Experience where it's affected me so much for so long that it finally did catch up to me due to, you know, a mood swing or just having a random depressed day. And so it was accumulation of a lot.
Tell me a little bit more about you know, you mentioned you felt depressed and anxiety. What was that like? What did you feel?
So at first, I really didn't know what depression or anxiety felt like. I've never really have gone to a doctor to get diagnosed with anything, but my body started to feel very different and out of sorts. I'm not a very big person to begin with. Like, I'm very athletic, but I was starting to lose a little bit of that athleticism. And I didn't think it was because of age, because I'm 33 now. You know, I thought it was taking more of a physical toll on my body that I just wasn't used to. I was putting on weight, which is hard for me as it is, but I felt like I wasn't strong anymore within my body. And so that depression state started to sink in, where the days definitely got lonelier and waking up got a lot more difficult on some mornings. And so that's when I really started to feel my brain started to kind of go in different directions where I did not want it to go. And got to a point where I started to really worry about myself. And then I ended up finally seeking help.
And this was at what age?
This was
more or less
26, 27 years.
Okay.
Really started to think about getting that extra help with everything that had been happening, you know, previously, whether it was, like I said, relationships or friendships that were lost, and just not really realizing. Mm-hmm. 26, 27 is when I really started to get some professional help on that side of things. And then creating kind of a concept that works for me, because everybody is different. Kind of creating that concept that works for me is why I'm continuing to be here today.
How does, the journey is so personal to each its own, correct? How does this journey affect your view on mental health in general? Like you said, prior to this, you didn't really know about depression or where to seek help. How does this shape your whole idea on mental health?
It's changed everything for me. Like I'd mentioned, I kind of created a concept for myself that works. And so because of that, it's opened up my perspective on mental health within men, especially because I was grown up and taught to, you know, don't cry, man up. And as much as I agree with the whole man up mentality, because, you know, you have to be strong as a person in general to overcome a lot of personal obstacles. So I do agree with a lot of the, you know, man up and let's get it going and let's go back to work and let's get back on that grind.
Mm-hmm.
There's times when you do need to take a step back and maybe sit in your room and cry it out. And, you know, losing the relationship that I did, I did a lot of crying because of that. But also I could tell that, you know, the tears were coming from the mistakes that I had made during my 20s when, you know, my 20s are a blur. They were very fast paced and kind of with the addiction to the gambling and the chasing. So it was very much a blur. And so my perspective on mental health has really changed from a personal standpoint that, you know, I decided to go back to school and get my master's in psychology because I really want to learn more about not necessarily the human mind, but how we can adapt to certain situations and understand, like, if something's happening, we can change that path and you can change your path no matter the age that you are on. I'm 33 now and I feel like I'm starting completely fresh in a new career path. So it's changed my perspective a lot on mental health and just genuinely my overall physical health too.
Welcome to the psychology world.
I'm excited. I'm learning a lot and it's a blast. You know, I studied business in college.
Yeah.
But psychology it's very fascinating because again, everybody is different. And that's, I think, what realize.
Looking back on your experience, can you tell us a story of when you were really on that low point that, you know, now going back, maybe at the moment you didn't realize it, but now you're able to see it for what it is or what it was.
Yeah, I think there was, the low point was I ran out of money and I was still continuing to chase and I was finding any means necessary to get a little extra money to try to win it back. And that's when I relied heavily on, you know, my family and I finally came clean to them about my issue. And it's definitely put a strain on some of my family dynamic, but you know, my family and I are also stronger than ever because of that. My relationship with my parents, you know, are very different between my dad and my mom, but they are both entrepreneurs. They both own their own businesses. They understand also what mental health is in their own respects. And so when I did hit rock bottom, I really kind of realized that it was time to reach out. And there was a point in time where I didn't want to wake up anymore. You know, the stress, the constant phone calls of, you know, collecting or whatever it is, you know, from a bookie or knowing that you can't even eat your next meal because of something so simple as losing all your money yesterday. The next day, you got to start over. And so there was many low points, but one in particular will always stick with me, just because it almost led me to a suicidal situation.
Yeah. And I mean, you've come a long way since that, but nothing like family support. And before that, they weren't aware of anything.
No. And that's, I think that's the biggest thing with sports gambling is you can't hide it. You know, I think a lot of times with drugs and alcohol, you can see that toll it really does take on you. But, you know, when you see a mental toll on somebody, from what I've really come to realize is it could be work-related. It could just be stress. It could be anything. You don't really know exactly where it is coming from. And for being a sports gambling addict, I was very good at hiding it, because since sports are on every single day, we have our favorite teams. We have our favorite players. We have our fantasy guys we, you know, look at all the time. We are constantly on our phones checking scores and checking stats. But what a lot of people don't realize is sometimes that's a sports gambler who is checking to see if they're winning or losing. And so me sitting at the dinner table checking my phone constantly might not have been, you know, a red flag for my,
might be overseen
or a friend, but you know, I was probably checking the score to see, you know, I was watching the game with the purpose of, because I had money on the line, not because I was actually interested in the outcome of that specific team.
Yeah. And again, so some of the symptoms that you were presenting were the mental toll, like texting. What other symptoms can people look out for?
Oh,
from your own,
definitely if somebody is screaming at the TV, they could be watching a game that, you know, my team is the Niners.
Wait, that's not normal. Yeah,
that's not normal in certain times, right? Screaming in a horror film is one thing, but like when you're watching, you know, let's say Marshall University versus Ball State. I have no correlation with any of those teams, right? But I'm sitting there screaming, punch the ball in, 5-yard line, run the ball in. No, we can't settle for a field goal. What are we doing? Like, you start to feel like you're a coach within the game.
Okay.
Whereas they don't care about the spread. Now, there's stories out there where obviously there's been manipulation on games. And so, like, there, people sometimes do pay attention to the spreads. But when you're a person behind the TV screen, and you lose a game by half a point because they kick a field goal and they end up winning by 2.5, but you're on the losing side of it, you get very angry for absolutely no reason, because you're watching two teams that just don't have any relevance to your day-to-day and you have no connection.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a red flag that you can kind of see, is if somebody is paying attention to a game that they don't have any connection to. If I'm watching the Niners, that's one thing. Or if I'm watching the Sharks, the Sacramento Kings, that's one thing. But seeing the red flags is always on your phone. All of a sudden, after a game is over, you're quiet. You're not thinking about why you lost that game. You're thinking about the next game to bet on to win your money back. So your mind starts to go a lot of different directions where you can't stop. And even if you win, you could be done for the day. Right. A sports gambler could do it as a living, make a profit one day and then just be done for the day. But the gambler side of it is, I got more funds to play with. Let's go big. And then you lose it and then chase it. That's a red flag. And that's when you can really start to see that quietness, the loneliness behind your eyes, the losing weight, the putting on weight, the eating unhealthy. I mean, there's a lot of factors and flags that can go into it. And seeing it.
Wow. And you know, the anxiety, always anxious about the outcome, correct?
The anxiety, the sweating for no reason, the screaming at players, the poor kids that you're betting on, college kids. And you know, that's a big thing that's gonna be in the spotlight in the media for the next few years is obviously the college betting. So it's getting scary.
Yeah, it's like a whole other world.
Yeah,
of course I know nothing about that world. I've seen it a lot in friends and people that I know. There's just the sports betting has become a big issue. So now you are going to school, doing their psychology. What is your goal? How are you going to utilize this?
So, you know, I had been going
degree in the future
throughout the years of going back to school, and I didn't really take school very seriously at a young age because I was very just sports driven. I had tunnel vision on just playing sports, you know, as long as I possibly could. And but I found the passion for coaching kids. You know, I coached ice hockey out here in Arizona for 4 years with my best friend, and it was the best 4 years of my life from the age of 25 to 28-ish. So realistically, though, coaching is also what saved me during my 20s because I was betting heavily during those times. And so it saved me at the end of the day. And being an assistant coach, you become closer with the kids maybe a little bit more than the head coach. And so I started to really work with the kids individually and seeing the progress that some of them were making and the connection I was making with kind of like a little brother because I'm the baby in my family. And so I liked finally being that older brother figure for these kids. And so I fell in love with coaching. And so, you know, with this psychology master's or MS, you know, I'm looking forward to doing some performance coaching with athletes. And that's cool. From an athlete standpoint. And then also just, again, learning a lot more about psychology in general to help addicts, sports gambling addicts, take their first step in recovery. And knowing my personal journey is more than likely, I would say, I don't know the stat, but I'd say 99% of my story is also going to be the same as their story because it's the same outcome. We're betting on the same stuff. And it's the same act of doing. And so my personal story will relate to a lot of men and women who are looking to take their first step, who might be scared of going to a family member or a therapist right away to admit their problem. And so I want to build out some programs that help, you know, some 14-day or one-month programs that help identify if you do have a problem. What do you want to do after now you were able to identify it? Are you wanting to take that next step, which could be help from a therapist, from a licensed therapist, or continue working with me and we can put some tools in place? And, you know, my concept, Find Your More, I have it tattooed right here on my arm now because I look at it every day. I brush my teeth.
Okay.
More stands for motivation, opportunity, routine, and energy. And, you know, as long as I input one of those each day, you know, in my life now, I'm going to have a good day. And so it's just about creating tools for maybe addicts to keep going each day as well. And I feel like I can also take that concept into youth sports and helping kids out during their teen years. So that's the goal. That's the vision, is kind of opening up my own personal performance coaching business. And getting back into coaching, working with people and helping people.
I mean, I think that's a wonderful goal to have and achievable, too. I think it's important to break the stigma in this subject. And that's why I wanted to talk about it, because not a lot of people talk about it. You know, it's stigmatized and you can hide it and it's not seen as something wrong. You know, like, OK, he's betting, whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't hear much about it up to the level of severity that you're talking about, at least.
And I think there is going to be a... you continue to grow up as they get older, because again, media is talking about it a lot. ESPN, which Disney, is coming out with their own sports book. So, you know, there's a lot of correlation between youth and growing up within the sports gambling world that they're just not going to be able to get away from. And so helping them just identify, like, I can't sit here and say, don't ever bet on a game, right? That's almost telling that. Their friends can't drink, or an alcoholic telling their friends that they can't drink because it may not affect them.
Exactly.
I don't want to be here and say, you know, don't ever bet on a sports game. It'll ruin your life, because it may not. But for a lot of us who maybe have that addictive personality, you know, $5 here and there for somebody may not be anything. But as soon as you start getting into those higher higher dollar bets, you know, that's when you need to really.
Yeah. Might be a problem. So what do you think is the difference between the people that do get addicted to the ones that don't? What's that addictive personality you're talking
about? Yeah. So I think, you know, the biggest thing is somebody could have the financial literacy. They could have the educational background on knowing, you know, $5, if they can afford it, may not affect them. And they may just want to throw $5 on, you know, their favorite team because it's their favorite team, not because they're trying to make money doing. And I think that's where I fell into a trap of the people I was surrounding myself with were almost convincing of you can make a living doing. And even though you're going to have losses, you're going to have your wins that are going to offset your losses. And so, you know, I fell into not a close group of friends by any means. You know, my real friends, we weren't ever pressuring or anything like that. You know, my good core group of friends, but it was people that I had just met through common circles or anything like that. And a lot of them are great people, but they're also in a different part of their lives, whether they can financially risk those certain things. And so when you start to see that addictive personality, you're thinking that you can make money doing it versus just turning it into an entertainment activity. You know, we go to sports games and we spend $100 for a ticket, $10 on a hot dog, $10 on a beer. And so, you know, you're $120 into it, and that's entertainment for us. So for those who can put $5 on a game for entertainment purposes and not because they're trying to live off of it, those are that's the difference between the addict versus somebody.
It makes a difference.
Casual better and just enjoys it. But that person that is betting $5 over time, if they're really not tracking, like I have a number in my head for what I have lost in my lifetime. And I will never get to that number again because I do know. But like for the people that lose $5 here and there, it'll start to add up over time. And you may be building your addiction without even realizing it because you're going to win, you know, 10 in a row and you're up $50 and you go buy a jacket or a pair of shoes or I don't know. Like, go buy, like, ooh, I want to buy more. And so, you know, very well happen. So a casual bettor can turn into an addict very easily.
So what would be your advice for someone that might be struggling through this addiction right now or might be considering that they might be falling into this category? Do they seek for help? Do they not seek for help? Yeah. What would be your personal advice?
Yeah. You know, I could sit here and say, I wish I realized I had a problem when I was 18 years old. My life would be completely different. But it could be also completely different in a way that I don't see where it is today. So I may have not met, you know, that relationship that I unfortunately lost. You know, that person taught me so much quality of life that maybe I did have to struggle for 10 years to meet that person. And now I'm on a path of helping other people. And my life could have been completely different. Yes, at the age of 18, had I gotten it under control. And, but, you know, I would say understanding your own addiction first, you know, and if you do need to take that first step, I would say find the comfort in, you know, maybe a close friend. It was very scary for me to go to my family and they weren't the first ones I told about this problem. Find the comfort in a close friend that will not judge you for anything that you do, whether it is an addiction to sports gambling or alcohol or drugs or whatever it might be. You know, find that comfort in that very close friend and talk to them about it. And I found that comfort in a very close friend of mine. And, you know, to this day, he'll be my best friend for the rest of my life. And, but he didn't judge me. He didn't say anything. You know, he said, you know, it's time to get back on track. Like, let's do it. And so finding comfort then also gave me the confidence to go and seek the professional help with my therapist here locally in Arizona. And she was fantastic. I worked with her for 2 years and she was great and she still is. And so I think you have to take that first step to find comfort in somebody. And I would suggest a friend, but that's just what worked for me. You might have a great relationship with your mom or your dad or your brother or sibling, sister. But for me, it was a friend and just admitting admitting that you might have a problem. And start identifying, you know, looking back at your mood swings or your depression states, you know, that's when you'll start to really realize that you do and you've had a problem for all these years.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned some of the resources like therapy. Are there any other resources that helped you at the time or that keep helping you now?
Yeah. So, you know, therapy was big and I would suggest it to anybody. You know, and me being a performance coach, you know, at times I wish I had that first step maybe, like as a performance coach to talk to, because I was very scared of therapy. And so, you know, I did find also an organization to work with. So outside of therapy, I'm working with a mental health organization that specializes in student athletes. It's the Hidden Opponent.
Okay. Wonderful.
Victoria Garrick and Leanne, the COO, you know, we've worked together for the last year, almost year and a half, on different things that that we can do to help build awareness around sports gambling. And so currently I'm actually raising money for the Hidden Opponent for an Ironman race that I'm participating here in Arizona.
Amazing.
So, you know, that's a big part of me finding, you know, kind of a coping mechanism too, is finding things to do and how I can give back. And so this Ironman that I'm doing is, it's a big personal goal, and it's more than just finishing the race at this point. It's proving to myself that I've overcame, you know, suicidal thoughts for many years, to getting my body healthy again, my mind healthy again, to where I can compete. And I don't know what it is, 100 and something, 130, 140 mile.
Oh my God.
And so, you know, I found that organization and they've been great. So I would say latch on to a local organization of yours. They're not based here in Arizona, but I'm trying to kind of work with them to really bring awareness out here in Arizona.
Yeah.
Their organization, because I want to work with athletes and they're working with college athletes specifically. And so me wanting to,
yeah,
athletes, it's also good to give those youth athletes something to look towards as they go into college, and so forth. So yeah. I found it very, very fun and organized.
Yeah, just community involvement, yeah, in general.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. I think going to schools would be amazing too, high schools.
Yeah.
I know they're always looking for public speakers, yeah, or at least I know I was always looking for public speakers.
So I'm doing the same.
But at that age, I mean, you said 18, that's like prime.
It's prime. It's when they really start to, I mean, with phones too, you know, I mean, I know these kids are getting phones at a much younger age. So I don't know the parental guidelines, yes, on downloading, you know, a sportsbook app. I think it is 18, but, you know, the accessibility is there more than ever now.
Yeah, kids will get around it.
And it's only legal in 28, 29 states, I believe, right now. And so it's not even legal across the whole country yet. And in my opinion, it will be probably soon.
If you had to list them, you know, when we talk about stigmas and all of that, what are some of the highest misconceptions of this topic?
I think the biggest thing is that people bet based on value. And so I think a big stigma is, if you bet $5, you don't have a problem. But it's the act of doing something that you're losing money that you worked very hard for, where the problem lies. And you're giving it back to somebody that they don't care about you. They don't care about what's going to happen to your mental health for losing, because at the end of the day, they make their money if you lose. And I think that's where the problem lies too. So, you know, the stigma around sports is, it's manly. It's, you know, stuff to do. We play football with gladiators. You know, the football players are gladiators, in my opinion. They're crazy sometimes. And hockey players too. But, you know, betting on sports, you should be able to, as a man, get a hold of yourself and not do it. But that's just not true. You know, sports, I feel like my knowledge in sports doesn't even scratch the surface on people that know even more. I have friends of mine who are just crazy, stat-driven sports guys that they know just so.
Okay.
But they could still lose on a game too, and it turns into a problem. So, you know, us as men, I would say, is the majority of sports gamblers. But you can get a problem very easily, even if you have the toughest skin out there. You know, we see it nowadays too, with some professional athletes getting in some trouble with gambling too, and it affects their eligibility. College kids especially, you might lose everything. And so, you know, I hope that kind of answered it, but I think where it lies,
yeah, of course,
you know, it's anybody can get addicted to it. And it is a serious problem. Even if you're paying $5 to $10, it's the added over time that it'll do to you.
Yeah.
That's the long-term effects.
And I think that's very important too, because when somebody says gambling, they're thinking like millions of dollars, you're betting millions of dollars, but it doesn't matter if you keep coming back with the $5 and the $10,
if
you make that a priority, then
in my lifetime, who knows?
Yeah. Well, to wrap this up, I want to ask you one last thing. What is the most critical message or lesson you hope to convey for both your athletes and individuals struggling with sports gambling addiction through your future, you know, through your future career in psychology?
Yeah. You know, for athletes, I would say, you know, as kids too, especially, you know, have fun, stay out of, you know, what may go on outside. You know, there's a lot of politics that go on in sports, and we're seeing it more than ever in youth sports. You know, it used to be, hey, be a good high school athlete, get to college, get be a good college athlete, you know, you get to that next step. But now it's almost like club level starting at 12 years old. And so just enjoy it. And that's what I hope to instill within performance coaching with youth kids, is enjoying the process and enjoying the moment where you are. I'm currently working with a kid that I used to coach in hockey, and he's playing hockey in Manitoba in a junior league. And you know, he's grinding and he's loving it. And I just keep reminding him, you're in the best years of your life right now. You're 18 years old. You're playing hockey for, you know, you're not in school right now. And, you know, you're playing junior hockey. You're exactly where I still want to be. You know, so I would say for youth kids, it's enjoying the process and playing it all. And for maybe sports gambling addicts, it's seek help. Don't be afraid. The addiction will take over your life. I lost 10 to 15 years of my life that I'm just never going to get back. I lost you know, like I said, a relationship that I may never get back. And it's unfortunate too, because whether it's indirectly because of the sports gambling, it's the long-term effects of the rest. And so that's what I hope to bring with the psychology master's and their psychology degree, and, you know, getting a certificate in addiction as well, and just continuing to educate myself as
yeah.
I can do, and bring my personal experience to the forefront, and jumping on, you know, something like this and telling my story. This is the first time I've actually told my story on a podcast, and I'm very excited that it is the first time. I've done a couple small speaking engagements with, you know, the hidden opponent, then we're going to keep doing them, but you know, those are just a few questions, getting really into the honesty and the truth behind the same story that somebody else might have. You can come out on the other side. And so I really hope that's what I get out of my psychology degree and my performance coaching business.
Yeah, no, and I love that you are using your platform to share your story for the first time. I think it could be very encouraging for others that might be listening, that are also going through that and are struggling and might be afraid to seek therapy, you know?
Yeah.
So I want to thank you. Yeah. Thank you for your honesty.
Oh, thank you. You and Brandon honestly got me that episode with Brandon. I mean, you know, it's just... if a guy like him, big, a lot bigger than me, I'm only 5'11", you know, 165 pounds, he's a strong man, but if he has the courage to stand up and show his mental health side, then why can't I?
Yeah, and it goes back to what we were talking about, you know, this whole idea of men can't cry or men can't be vulnerable, they can't share their story, and I think that's all BS, so... then again, I'm a therapist.
Yeah.
But no, for real, just opening up and talking about your mental health can be so empowering.
Yeah.
You know, so thank you again for coming.
Thank
you. Or being here virtually.
I know, this was great.
Yeah. All right. Thank you guys for listening. Please don't forget to leave us a comment, subscribe, liked, and let us know your thoughts. Let us know what you're going through, and we'll be in touch. We'll see you next week.